Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for The Diplomat. And with me today is Murray Hunter. Murray is an Australian journalist and independent scholar who was recently detained in Thailand on defamation charges in Malaysia. And it's disturbing for many reasons, in particular transnational repression and how this phenomena is spreading. Murray, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Luke. Nice to be here.
Take us through what happened. The story really picked up for the international media when you were detained while trying to board a flight for Thailand. But this story actually started in Malaysia. Can you walk us through what happened?
Okay. Well, the backstory is I'm a writer and I've been focusing on Malaysia for many years with a Substack, which I created during the COVID era. I've been writing on behalf of a lot of people who can't get their voice out about the human rights violations they have. And we planned for a year a holiday to Hong Kong. So we saved up and booked everything. Got up to Bangkok, went to Suvarnabhumi Airport on last Monday morning, checked in, went to have a quick breakfast, came back to where we go into the security and immigration, and there were some immigration police hanging around. They came up to us and told me there was an arrest warrant for me, which it was actually a shock. Didn't expect that. So they took me to the back of the airport, where the front of it, and kept me in the holding office there until the police from Bangkok came across to transport me to the police station there. And upon arrival there, within about 1 or 2 minutes, I'd been told to go follow them to the cell and everything taken away from me and put in a cell and told in the morning, you're going to court. So that was a bit of a shock. I didn't expect from getting ready for a holiday to Hong Kong to being in a cell within a couple of hours. Information came out. My partner, she found out that, somebody had made a complaint that I've written defamatory articles about the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission in Malaysia, and that I have defamed them. So in the morning, you'll go to bail and you'll get out. So the next morning, we went along to the Southern Bangkok Criminal Court, and within a couple of hours, I'm out on bail now for a hearing on November the 17th.
Right. Now, so you've allegedly defamed the MCMC in Malaysia. They have initiated a defamation suit in Malaysia, but also in Thailand, in another jurisdiction. And the argument, as you're putting it, and I can't find much wrong with your argument, is this is emerging as another form of transnational repression.
Yeah. I know the MCMC has been after me for a couple of years now because I'm being blunt in what I've said. And I've been recording and reporting what's going on, the truth. They don't like it because, people don't know what's going on a year ago. So that reporting was very important. But I've also been blocked. So people inside Malaysia can't read my Substack unless they have a VPN or they subscribe and get the email. So it's very hard for people to read me now. Sometimes the last 6 months, I feel I've been writing to myself. But I'm aware because they've been coming, people had been coming around my house last year and staying outside and trying to deliver summonses and all that. And, you know, it was quite intimidating. You know, sometimes they'd stand out the front door all day, all night and wait for you to come out. And that was rattling. So we just went to my partner's home on the other side of the country and, you know, got away from it because that was very hard to live with. You imagine if you've got somebody outside your house night and day. So it was just good to get away from that. Yeah, so in terms of Thai law, I thought that, you know, I've respected Thai law. I like living here. I don't want to break any laws here. I don't want to break any laws in Malaysia. But I believe it's my duty to tell the story so other so Malaysians can know what's going on in their country. And they're on the basis of people contacting me and telling their stories, and I've been relaying them. And I know many, most of them are true because of the volume.
Right. There's several issues here. One is the growing phenomena of slaps, which is, slaps are, it's an acronym for strategic lawsuit against public participation, and they've become quite an issue initially in the United States, but it's whereby aggrieved parties can sue anyone, anywhere. Normally, these lawsuits are, they sue you for exorbitant amounts of money, and because of the internet, they can sue wherever a story is downloaded. Now, often it doesn't get to court, but what it does do, it ties down, and what I'm told, we're talking tens of thousands of people are being tied down by these lawsuits deliberately to shut them up. One example is the lawsuit launched by US President Donald Trump against Rupert Murdoch, $15 billion. It's just this way of silencing critics and doing it in other countries. And transnational repression has been an extraordinary issue in Southeast Asia, in particular Cambodia, Vietnam, Thailand. We've seen politicians assassinated. We've seen political activists picked up from other countries and then returned. And it's, I think it's also interesting that it's happening in Malaysia under Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, who many people backed for many years because they saw him as a victim of institutional abuse when he was in prison for all those, for many years.
Well, you brought up so many issues there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful. But,
slap actions were really a corporate thing. And it was to get rid of those critics. So they would do exactly what you said, and they'd put an action on somebody. And normally, I think you and I know what it does to a human. It, you know, you can't get out of bed in the morning. You can't sleep. You can't think. You can't write. You can't eat even. You lose your appetite. And most people just give up and they say sorry and they say, please have mercy on me. And they get on with their life. Some of us are a bit more hard-headed and they raise the stakes. So that's a very common tactic used by corporations. And now we have this new generation of managers who don't have the ethics and the empathy that, say, the generation before them have. So if somebody criticizes you or your corporation or your work, slap is considered just a normal management tool these days. They don't consider the consequences. What's happened in my case is a commission, a government agency, is now using the same tactic in a third country that normally doesn't have a jurisdiction over what I've written about Malaysia. But they're getting around the law by sending somebody to make a complaint locally, which is a technicality, and then saying, well, there's criminal defamation against you in Thailand. And because here it's criminal, it, you know, a slap action is a tool with the police teeth. And right. The other advantage that they don't even have to spend money to do the prosecution. So it's cheap. If you run a slap action in Malaysia or some other country, Cambodia, you have to employ lawyers to do it, and it costs a lot of money. But in Thailand, it's basically the police will follow through with the action. So I'm worried that Thailand's going to be the flavor of the month for slap actions in the future. And it's not about governments. Imagine if you write about some transnational that has an office in Bangkok. So they'll get a message, an email from the UK or US or Singapore or Hong Kong saying this particular person's writing stuff about us, go down and make a complaint. So we've also seen many, many cases of people writing food and hotel reviews and being hauled up for criminal defamation. So I just see this growing. I see my case as a precedent because this is the first time that government is using other governments, and they're obviously cooperating. They've been talking about ASEAN cooperation, and we know with the maid being deported back to Cambodia that this is not the first case. The authorities in Malaysia knew that she would go to jail. There wasn't any due process. So this just shows complete lack of compassion and empathy. You know, before we'd know that refugees, political refugees, were given sanctuary in countries like Australia, our own country. You know, you're wanted by a government. You would be you'd be given, you know, safety of abeyance in Australia because it's very dangerous for you to go back. This does not exist anymore.
Well, it's worth pointing out that Australia is one of a few countries in the West that is trying to deliver on anti-SLAP legislation to try and nip this in the bud. But I think you're referring to Nguyen Thu Huynh, who was a Cambodian mate, 36, kind of from an impoverished background, goes to work as a maid in Malaysia as a for a middle class family, and she was political in the sense that she'd write what she thought on Facebook, but so what? So that's what most people do, and then they basically conspired to have her documents rescinded. She was declared an illegal alien in Malaysia. She's deported, and now she's serving time in a Cambodian prison. It's quite extraordinary what's happening. Just to take listeners back a bit, for those who are, we're getting old, but in the old days, that defamation was a civil suit, and if you slandered someone or defamed them or ruined their reputation or brought them down, you'd liable to pay money. But defamation is now criminalized, which means you go to jail, and there's also pretrial detention laws. So anyone can be picked up, charged with a criminal offence in defamation, and because of pretrial detention laws, they can immediately put you in prison.
Mm.
And I think you touched on an important point just before. I mean, if you're a tourist, I'll back up a little bit, because we're living in a region where governments are crying out for Western investors. They want Western tourists to return. But the way these laws are now stacking up, you could go to Bali and write a negative review about a coffee shop. And if the coffee shop is owned by the daughter of someone important, you might be put in jail before you get on the plane home. I mean, this is where it's heading. And people were warning about this many years ago.
Yeah, well, it's happening now. And I think there's thousands of just Australians who are digital nomads, journalists, freelance journalists, because the age of freelance journalism is now upon us. They don't have the backing of AP or Reuters or, the Herald Sun like they did, say, in the old Vietnam days. So they're on their own. And they could write something about, as you say, in Bali or Malaysia or Cambodia, and they could be in Thailand. They are not safe. And this can be very unwitting. They may not know, you know, doing a financial report and saying this company,
right,
you know, you have to watch, it's not performing. That could be considered defamatory now.
Yeah, I'm wondering what this means for, say, someone who works for Moody's or Standard Poor's, and they write a, you know, they're being asked to write a critical report of a listed company on a Southeast Asian stock market. They say the outlook is, you know, it's not that great, and the company's only worth 30 cents a share instead of a dollar a share. And that report is then, I get these reports via email, which constitutes publication. Could they then be sued? I mean, how can you run a legit, how can businesses run how can you run a legitimate business if you can't tell the truth?
Well, that's a situation. And if I was a financial analyst, I don't think I would like to be in this part of the region now, because you know, they have damages. Our stock market's gone. Our stock market price has gone down, and that's a direct result of this article. And then they can claim, oh, massive damages. So this is where we're heading. And this case, my case, is perhaps a precedent to that. Other companies and government agencies are going to look, and particularly the large corporations. And you know how many large corporations with spare money around this region.
Sure.
They'll take offense to any an analytic report they don't like, and they'll put a slap action on. So it's very, very dangerous now.
How much does culture contribute to this? I mean, it's a bit of an awkward subject, but, you know, a few of us have lived here for decades, and we all know that the concept of Asian face, as we used to call it, you can never embarrass anybody. You're not allowed to say anything bad. Yeah, which it was very always, you know, the kowtowing, which I think has made a return, particularly in countries like Cambodia and Thailand. How much does this contribute to this sort of? It was always separated. You know, yeah, okay, you pay your respects and you do it the way that it's being demanded, but you still have to tell the truth about how things were going, in order for people to make an assessment about what they will do next, whether it was a foreign investor, whether it was an NGO that's catering for the health and education needs of the people in some of these countries. Malaysia was famous for as a second home destination, and in terms of for retirees. But if you can't make an honest assessment, if you're constantly running the risk of being put in jail, and more so in that, you can go to any other country in Southeast Asia and now be prosecuted.
Exactly. And the new rule is thou shall not criticize.
Right.
If you do, there could be consequences. And I think there will be consequences, because this trend is growing. Publicity this case is getting is actually has a negative side, where it's going to give people ideas. You say, oh, that happened in this case with the MCMC. Well, I can do that too. So
right.
It's open season now on journalists and analysts and anybody who has to do, you know, public analysis of anything in the region. And NGOs are particularly in danger, because they don't like certain NGOs, because they keep pointing to weaknesses of government. So now they can take them out and get rid of them through slap actions. And they don't have
right.
to be based in that country. They can do it from another country. So we all have to be concerned about this.
I've even been told about from colleagues in America about Chinese use, and not just China, but the use of AI to issue slaps. So you can have an academic postgrad student at a university who's researching a topic in regards to, say, China or Russia, and AI is monitoring these students. So there's actually no human involvement. But what they do is when they perceive a negative sentiment, a slap action can be issued immediately through a bot. Now, it may not be that real in terms of what court, where, how is this going to happen, but it is sufficient enough to shut down the academic who, yeah, could be a 22-year-old kid working at McDonald's trying to finish his master's off in Portland, Oregon or something. You know, and it's the ramifications for this are mind-boggling. It does involve AI. And I think it's a subject that nobody's even remotely close in to broaching.
Well, the International Olympic Committee has been using AI to pick off copyright on the internet, on YouTube, right, particularly, and whatever. So when the Olympics comes around, if there's anybody using material from the TV or whatever about and showing the Olympic events, they'll issue what they call a DCMA. I've forgotten what the acronym stands for, but basically they serve it on YouTube, and YouTube has about 2 hours to take it down. And within 14 days, if they don't present any evidence that the users breach the copyright, then it can go back up. But it's just you.
Right.
So the Olympics goes for 2 weeks. It doesn't matter if you're guilty or not guilty. If this slap action comes, if this DCMA comes, your material will be taken down, and you've got no retribution whatsoever. Because it happened to me a couple right, of Olympics ago.
Well, that sounds legitimate, though. I mean, I think the whole copyright, it's a separate issue, and it does matter. And I think what you're saying is that the AI technology is there to basically rip through anyone and anything. And you've got a lot of people out there who, they don't really know what they're doing. They think they do, but it's very easy for them to get themselves in trouble, I think, is what you're saying as well. And this is where it's going to have serious ramifications going forward in terms of whether or not Western countries should even engage Southeast Asia, and certainly China and Russia. I mean, we've seen an enormous back off anyway. Then came COVID, and the back off remained. The Chinese came in to a lot of these countries late 2010s, and now they've left. So it really comes back to, I guess, how much do these countries want to engage the West, and at the same time, each other. We've had the political assassination of Lim Kim Ya earlier this year, which is notorious in Thailand. He was a Cambodian politician. The hitman has been arrested and jailed for life. The people who are also accused of working in league with him are in Cambodia. There's no transnational agreement on this one, and the Thais have a warrant out for their arrest. So, and this is, as we all know, there's a standoff with the border dispute in Thailand at the moment. But the point is that it's like you've got hitmen and people who are assassinating other people, political commentators included, running around with impunity. But you can get nicked for a parking fine, really. If you're an average go-blow tourist or just an ordinary person doing their job as yourself.
Yeah, well, that's the issue now, because basically I'm silenced while I go through all this process. And there are still a lot of people getting arrested and treated illegally, I would say. The human rights have been taken away, and there's nobody to report these things now. And the local media is basically very restricted in what they're going to publicize. So it allows, there's no scrutiny of these organizations. There's no ombudsman people can go to. There's No claims they can make with any human rights review body that would dare touch it. So there's becoming a new era of lawlessness in terms of governments and police forces and intelligence bodies running around the region, taking out dissidents and critics and journalists. So this is scary.
Well,
Sorry.
I was just going to add, I did a podcast with Chloe Riddell, who's a member for the European Union Parliament. She was charged with producing a report on transnational repression for basically it's to form some kind of get some concepts going about how is it going to be dealt with. And one of the biggest issues is Interpol. It's an institution that's had a place in international societies over the years for prosecuting all sorts of drug dealers, terrorists, or but now Interpol is being used by governments in Iran to pick up critics of their authoritarian regime. Now, there was one chap, I think he was nabbed by the Italian police because he had a red flag on his. Against his name, and this is not what Interpol is supposed to be about. And it's an extraordinary turn of events, I guess.
Yeah, I think generally around the world now, the human rights we and ethics we were taught when we were both at uni and school have disappeared. I think when you went to uni, you probably had a whole unit on ethics and journalism and business and whatever. I don't think
Yeah,
they
quite
teach
a
it
few
now.
actually.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think it's all gone.
Where does this leave Anwar Ibrahim? I'll go back to him. Starting to run out of time. I remember the people who know him. They always had their main concerns about Anwar was that he promises everybody everything, and it's always been difficult to know where he stands. He would speak to Islamic women, and he would give them the spiel that, of course, women entitled to their rights, and women can do as they please. He'd tell them everything they wanted to hear. Then he would go to the hardline Muslims and tell them, women should be in burqas and should be locked up during the week. That might be a bit harsh, but the point is that Anwar was in prison for a long time. He was victimized, and a lot of people went to his defense because they saw his human rights being absolutely abused. And now, what he's done to you, following on from the Malaysian maid story about a year ago, I guess now, but you've lived and worked in Malaysia for a long time, having moved to Thailand. How does this leave you feeling?
Well, I talk to people, even though I'm not in Malaysia, I talk to people in Malaysia on an hourly basis, not even a daily basis. Even today, I've had, probably half a dozen calls with people. And I'm told what's happening to critics of the Anwar government. They've been picked up. I've been told conspiracy theories about what's going to happen after the ASEAN summit to dissidents and all these stories. But perhaps I'll put Anwar in the analogy that some entrepreneurs are great at startups and
Right.
they're absolutely brilliant, but they can't run the companies they start up because starting up and gaining support and putting coalitions together and running actually the day-to-day management and running and vision of a country is very, very different. So I sort of, to be kind, I put him in that category. He's always been a
Right.
pragmatist, rather than somebody who has a deep inner philosophy and vision. And he's ruling with a coalition that is very feudalistic in the way they've organized themselves. So is it, you could imagine every ministry is like its own castle and doing its own thing. And the MCMC is one of those organizations. it's sort of autonomous from Anwar's government. So I think one of the big issues is coordinating and stopping, rogue ministries doing their own thing. And I think that's a very tough job. Some people will use the word deep state. But coordinating and having a team that shares the same vision and goes ahead. I think also we're seeing that in Western governments as well. The new governments are very different because they've got younger people. The baby boomers have gone. The Gen Xers are retiring. And these new generations are seeing management rather than vision as a key. So I think Anwar's got a lot of those issues to deal with. And he has to turn, like this visit of President Trump to Malaysia, if he actually comes. How can he be a diplomat and a critic of of what's happening to the Palestinians? That's got to be balanced off. So he's going to face a lot of criticism. Sorry?
Yeah, no, we'll leave Palestine aside for a bit, but before we sign off, I think what you're saying is that these political leaders need to know what's also happening underneath them, and they need to act and nip a lot of this in the bud. As opposed to, I think there's a Shakespearean line that goes, who will rid me of this meddlesome priest? Where action is taken, but the leader is removed. And I think what you're saying is they need to step in and act.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. And on that note, Murray Hunter, good luck. You've got the court case on November 17 in Bangkok, which I think everybody will be watching very closely. And we'll see what happens next.
Oh, thanks, Luke. It's been a pleasure to have a chat with you today.
Thanks, mate.